Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And yet they still think that Biden is a lizard and Trump is the right choice. In a lot of cases, it's like, come on, man, look at your life as we just laid it out for you. It's awful.
Why? You don't have time to. Even if Biden is a lizard, fine.
Yeah,
if he is a lizard, you don't have time to worry about that. You got to walk 10 miles to the nearest grocery store. The lizard ain't your problem. Is. Boom! There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another phenomenal episode of My Mama Told Me, the podcast where we dive deep, deep into the pockets of black conspiracy theories, and we finally work to prove that LL Cool J keeps his formal paperboy hat on while he has sex. Forward when it's missionary, backwards when he's doing something a little naughty, and then sideways when he's letting his wife get in that butt. You know what I mean? Whatever direction it's facing, that's the type of horny LL Cool J is. That guy loves a paperboy hat. It doesn't matter how ridiculous he looks. He will keep the paperboy hat on. I am your host, Langston Kerman. I'm excited to be here today. My guest, oh, what a guest he is. One of my favorite people on this here planet Earth. So funny. You know him from Sherman's Showcase. You know him from Southside. You know him, more importantly, from the after party show from Southside that we did together. It was called Cooler by the Lake, and it didn't get enough views because of Viacom and their goddamn paywall. But you gotta believe it was the best thing he and I have ever done together, and we'll never get to do it again. He's hilarious. A dear friend. Give it up for Will Miles.
Oh, shit. Thank you. Thank you. If you're out there, go watch the after show right now.
Go watch it right now. Turn off this episode. What are you listening to this bullshit for? Cooler by the Lake's what you need to be watching.
Be the 12,001 viewer. I say once now also. That's what
I like that. I like that. You've changed. And I like that about you. You're a father, and then you just threw out regular grammar. You like, yeah. I do it different now.
When you're a daddy, you can say, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think I said daddy. I'm only being allowed to be called dad. That's my hard stance.
Oh, you're not doing daddy.
I don't think I want to do daddy. I'm like, you know what? It's got such a weird, I don't want to, like, you know.
Right.
So even when people are like talking to her and they'll be like, you're daddy. I'm like, no, I'm her dad. Just take it easy. No,
this is a very formal relationship.
We handshake, all right? None of that bullshit.
I don't want her getting too familiar with me. This is mostly business. I'm excited you're here today. You came to us with a a conspiracy theory that I think a lot of us have held for years. But so many of us, I think, are afraid to say it out loud because of what it might imply about our own lives, about the things that we would lose in our own experiences. But you said, my mama told me.
Fast food restaurants are strategically placed in the hood to keep Black people complacent and kill them at a faster rate.
Absolutely. It's without a doubt true. It's the one thing where you're like, you know what? That is categorically undeniable.
There's no way to refute this.
Right. Like liquor stores, sure. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Gun stores, as Chappelle's joke goes, everybody knows that. But it's fast food as well is where you're like, yo, the only food option is Burger King? What's going on?
Right. It's not even just the placement of them. It's the removal of all other options that makes it so fucking tyrannical, where it's like, God damn, I can't eat nothing but McNuggets. This is evil.
Put a lettuce, like put a mixed. You seen that bougie ass salad place? Throw a mixed over there. Put a mixed in Englewood. How about that?
Yeah, let me see what a tossed salad could do for my for my knees, for my backbone.
Grilled chicken. Also, salads shouldn't be this expensive anyway. You know you're getting over. Make them reasonably priced in the hood.
Sure. Like,
let's be real.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about where this comes from for you, because I think to your point, it's something we've noticed, right? You notice that you see it out in the world. When do you feel like you first caught wind of this, or did somebody say it to you that then triggered your third eye opening on this shit?
It's things you notice. It's shit you hear adults talk about where you're like, can't get no good food around here. And you're like, oh, okay, that's just something adults say every now and then.
Right.
Then you're like, you start to notice neighborhoods you go to, because by like, what, 6 or 7, we had moved to, you know, like a townhouse, north side of Chicago. So things were a little bit different. So we were like, I got to see what, you know, restaurants are and everything. So,
like, oh, wait. You get to sit down in this one? Oh, Cherie.
I was like, this is like a real, this is every place is fancy when you're a kid. So you're like, man, any Applebee's is fancy. It's like, they got regular shit.
Did you know they let you color on the napkins? This place, this is something else.
Bennigan's was the height of luxury when I was like, you know, throughout childhood.
And you know what I was trying to explain to someone the other day is Ruby Tuesdays.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to think Ruby Tuesday was like the fucking hell yeah. If we got to go there, this was a big deal. They had like a more like a sexy salad bar than the other like fast food or whatever, those buffet style restaurants and shit.
And their fast food, that was on like the promo items that they had. Mm-hmm. Like this, look at our salad bar. Don't forget, we got a salad bar. Like,
and listen, they weren't lying. That salad bar was something else.
It was amazing. I had it as an adult. Me and Mike Lawrence went. We both had this job on some pilot that didn't go through, obviously. And you know, pilots don't go through.
Sure.
For Comedy Central.
It's weird that they just keep coming up in failed projects. It's almost like there's a theme here. I wonder what could be the issue. There's no way to unpack that.
Nope.
This conspiracy theory podcast could never figure out what's happening with these Comedy Central projects.
They always go halfway, and then they like, man, what happened? We were having fun. But that was one of those shows where it was like, damn, we're having fun. But we could kind of tell early in that one that we were like, you know, this probably won't be a thing. So we just started to take advantage of the lunch options around there.
Yeah.
And it was like Red Lobster, Ruby Tuesdays, and like the Counter, the burger spot.
The Counter's good.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
It was like we were in Times Square, basically. So we went to the Times Square Ruby Tuesdays one day.
Wait a minute. Okay. That needed its own context, because that is not the same thing as going to the Counter in any other situation, or the Red Lobster in any other situation. For those of you that have not experienced Times Square at its, I guess at its always, but it Times Square is mayhem and chaos of nothing but people who don't know how to be outside in like public and all can sort of like meeting in a singular place to like destroy the goodness of America and American values.
I mean, that's true. We've all done shows at Caroline's, the audience members too. They can be great, but they can also be a reflection of the neighborhood sometimes.
Yes, 100%.
But it is like, it's dark.
It's a dance.
There used to be prostitutes over there, which is weird. It doesn't even look like it now.
Used to be. There's still prostitutes. They just don't post up anymore. They walk.
They wear Spider-Man outfits.
Right, yeah. It's a prostitute dressed up like Dora the Explorer, but and you just got to know, if you tap on the skull twice, she'll take that off and she'll take something else off too.
She fucks like, that's terrible.
No, you finished the joke on this show. You finished the goddamn joke on this show.
When she fucks, she also looks in the camera and says, "Do you like to?" That's
there
extra,
it
though.
Is. That's the. That's why we do it. This is the art. Okay, so you start noticing sort of this trend of the fast food restaurants. I know in your initial sort of like theorizing or a conversation about this, you had a theory about certain restaurants in particular. You felt like some of them were more criminal than others in their behavior.
Absolutely. And one in particular, because so my aunt, my great aunt used to live on Stony Island 66. So we'd go around there and I'd see the food options. And there's like, you know, there's Doc's, which is like a small fast food restaurant, fish place. And then there's like a BJ's and stuff. And like, you know, that's actually new, but back then it was something else. But there's stuff around there, Harold's and shit, that you're like, this is good fast food. But then it's the same thing, like the same exact restaurant that is so close to Morehouse, Spelman, and Clark Atlanta University. In Atlanta, that it became obvious it's criminal.
Yeah,
is Popeyes, because like why? Yeah. First of all, why is Popeyes that good for one?
Sure,
it's very clearly delicious chicken. Mm-hmm. If it is chicken, it's clearly not like, you know, regular chicken.
Yeah, and to that point, you're light years ahead of your competitors, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like KFC is right on your tail. And so you got to constantly be working on these seasons, these herbs and spices to make sure that you're able to beat out KFC. Nobody fucking likes KFC. Their chicken's wet when it's supposed to be dry. Nobody's a fan. And then churches taste like the mistakes that KFC and Popeyes made. And then they just go and pick it up in a big, like a basket, and then bring it back to their restaurant. So your competitors are out of the window. So why are you working so hard to make this delicious chicken?
Constantly, like up until this year, it's like you guys could have taken a break, but sandwich time. Like what? Yeah. You were already it's like Usain Bolt being like, let me get faster. It's like, come on, take it.
You beat it, man. You beat the game. What do you need to keep doing this for?
I need to get 10 seconds faster than the next nigga. That's what I need. No. But and especially by Morehouse and because the thing is, they put all HBCUs, everybody knows this, in the hood. So, you know, we're in the middle of the hood as well. And it's like, you know, they will be some of the most powerful black people in the world at some point. Right now, they're just broke ass niggas from other parts of the country.
Could be Kamala. Could be Kamala.
Look at Kamala. I mean, come on. Look at Kamala. And then look at me. Products of HBCUs. We are important people.
We are the same. Me and her.
I inspire people.
Yeah. Will was also a cop at one point and takes a lot of pride in it. He's really proud of being a cop.
Prosecutor. And I thought I was doing the good thing, but yeah. But yeah, so it's one of the best food options in that area by school. And it's where everybody always goes. I mean, they did the KFC scene in school days, but it's really Popeyes. Like that KFC is the other way, but it's also not very good. But the Popeyes is so good. The red beans and rice.
Great.
Fucking mashed potatoes with the Cajun gravy. First of all, who doesn't love New Orleans? Everybody loves New Orleans, unless you have a severe drinking problem.
New Orleans has never hurt anybody.
No. The hoodoos, it's got nothing but curses and voodoo, but everyone's sure. Like, yo, I'm going to go every year.
Hey, who am I to miss out on the opportunity to be cursed by a strange lady?
So
I will say that I think... I don't know that I grew up thinking that Popeyes was the most egregious offender of like sort of attacking black people. But I also think that that's such a regional thing that to your point, you're like referencing all these, you know, colleges, like the black colleges that you're aware of. And so you're sort of like tracking it that way. And for me, it was like McDonald's was everywhere. It was like literally every direction I turned, and White Castle. It was McDonald's and White Castle when I was a kid that like you couldn't go without seeing a White Castle in the hood.
That's true, too. There was a White Castle near, well, where we're from in the Midwest and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it is. What's so crazy is McDonald's was so open about it. I felt like automatically they're showing all their cards. So
yeah.
Like, you know, it's hip hop in the commercials. It's black people only in the commercials. It's like you're very clearly targeting.
Black people
to die early because of this. But Popeyes was so like subtle because I don't even remember commercials as a kid too much. Like maybe they had I know they had the music.
Yeah, they love that chicken from Popeyes.
Great song. Come on.
Yeah, it's a good song. And they had that second line beat in it. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, I fucking do love the chicken from Popeyes.
It's so secretive. That's why, because they're just like selling New Orleans, but really they know what they're doing.
They're selling that chicken. Yeah,
they're selling that chicken.
And they, yes. And I guess I'm wondering, what do you think specifically is their plan here? Like, walk me through the actual, like, maniacal steps that are transpiring in placing the Popeyes there and presenting it to black people through song and dance.
It even sounds worse now that you say it like that.
Yeah, I didn't help the situation at all.
By the way, Popeyes, I still would do a commercial for you any day of the
week. Oh, I'll bite this shit out of a biscuit right now. Send it here. I'll bite it.
We've been known to do sponsored videos. So look, Annie, if it pays the bills, I'll do it.
Yeah, we did a sponsored ad for Old Spice. I don't use that shit, but I'll pretend. I will pretend immediately.
For that check, I was like, hell yes, let's do this. I will wear it today. And I didn't even wear it that day. I haven't worn it in 20 years. Great ad though. Check it out. It's on
YouTube. It was a great ad.
Yeah, but no, I think it goes so far back for this because I think I brought up too, the Black Panthers did all that work to provide food for the hood, and they've had so much donations and everything. They provided food for beyond the hood as well. They like went around, so it became like more of a look at how we can live.
Yeah,
I know people are always talking about like communism is bad and all that stuff, and it is sure in some cases, but. The way they figured that part out, like socialism with food shouldn't even be argued. It's like, yeah, why not? What are we doing where some people live longer and some people don't because of the food options they have? So I think it's the government has been designed. I don't know if they're so open with it, but it's been designed for years to keep one set of people down. Sure. Which is us.
Yeah. I like that you think the white listeners were at home and you're like, maybe it's me. Maybe. Okay, I'll hear them out.
Could be me. If you're white and poor, you get strays, but it's not targeted.
I was about to say, you're also the target. You just don't know it and sometimes are tricked into believing you're not the target.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think so that always stuck out to me learning that about the Black Panthers, like, and the fact that they got shut down very soon after they started reaching, not shut down, murdered and murdered and vilified. So they, but that was shortly after they started reaching beyond just the hood and as far as providing meals.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to your larger point, one of the things that people often point out was like the finishing touch of like the Black Panthers was their free food program.
Yeah.
And that like they weren't angry at the idea of these guys. They pretended to be, but they weren't genuinely angry about these guys carrying weapons. They weren't actually afraid of this organization and their threat to overthrow the government. They genuinely were afraid of the idea of some version of egalitarian resources being spread throughout, you know, Black and underprivileged communities, which meant that like, all right, we got to shut this down because that fucks up the algorithm. That we can't keep people in place the way we want to if their bellies are full.
Yeah. And if most people have stock in McDonald's, it's like, no. Get these niggas out of here. Like,
yeah. And I like what you're saying, that this isn't even just like some, because sometimes I think we blame things on the government and it's more specific than that. And I think what you're suggesting is it's corporate America recognizing that like, oh shit, my McDonald's stock will drop if everywhere they start replicating free food programs.
Exactly.
I won't have McDonald's breakfast to sell anymore, which means I got to kill, you know, three or Fred four Hampton, really powerful Black men and then make the rest of them go to jail or go crazy.
Yeah. Or become the weirdest congressman in Chicago history.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's like, it's so targeted in that respect that it's like, man, and because they have these business models and structures set up for expectations. So McDonald's has this structure set up where it's like, I sell this many cheeseburgers at this price, then my stock grows, and all that shit is set up for ages. So then that little thing can throw all that off. The little bit of like egalitarian resources can throw that off so much.
Right. That they're like,
well, we've got money. Corporate pays for politics traditionally. So, you know, person in office is like, well, now I don't control, but the cops listen to me because I'm an asshole. So.
No, they listen to me. I'm a dickhead. It's fine.
So it's all a circle. Yeah, it's all like a weird circle of people we should not quite trust.
I like where you're going here. We're tracing this back to the money, which I always believe is the thing that sort of like leads to the bigger problems in the world, right?
Yeah,
I guess I'm curious about your personal relationship with fast food. Like, are you a fast food person? Do you still have a relationship now knowing that, now being able to point out the evil that you're recognizing?
Yeah.
You still go like, are you like anti-Popeyes or are you like somewhere in the middle?
I'm more in the middle in theory, but I also am married. And so being married in this day and age, you're really not allowed to eat fast food.
Hey, I hear you, brother.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, hold on. Wait a minute.
So that's how they get you.
That's how they get you. Because, and I'm not talking about they. Usually, I'm talking about the white man when I say that. This one, I'm talking about those evil women who come into our lives and steal precious goodness from us. McDonald's is my favorite restaurant in the world. I don't give a fuck what they're doing to the Black community. Get that evil poison in my body. Let me help poison my peers. I love it so much. And my wife now has created rules where like I'm not allowed to have it more than like twice a month. And I'm miserable.
Yeah. But it's always for these reasons of like, you know, I want you to be alive for the baby. And it's like,
oh, your heart beats funny. Yeah, I wanted to stop doing that.
The doctor said, please stop. But
the doctor said you had weeks to live.
But it is. So, yeah, I don't eat it basically in the last 7 years.
Yeah. No, I think to your point, your relationships and the people around you ultimately are the thing that changes us, right? That helps us start to be able to track, okay, this thing that I've mostly been leaning on because I didn't have any money or because it's all I knew or because I wasn't taught that there were other options. Somebody comes into your life, be it your wife, your kids, whoever, and you start to actually think about this shit.
Yeah, big time. I mean, in so many ways,
The unfortunate part, and this goes back to your original conspiracy theory, is a lot of us are put in positions where even if you're aware of it, there's not that much you can actually do about it because these restaurants are so peppered, so heavily peppered throughout our communities that like, all right, I don't want to eat McDonald's every day, but if I live without any other resources, what the fuck else can I do?
Yeah. And it makes a lot of us be the, you know, we're all different versions of the I got out. but it's like, you know, got to take more pages from people like Nipsey and be like, I got out, but I could be helping out.
Yeah.
A lot of, I mean, especially when you lean more conservative, I guess, you're less likely to be like, also, let me go back and help them out too. But
right. Yeah, it does become like this weird game of I got out and now do I have any responsibility to help get other people out or do I just stay the fuck out and enjoy my new life that doesn't involve McDonald's? Vince Staples has this I was telling somebody about it actually recently, but like Vince Staples did this interview that sticks with me. Where he talked about how him and his family were so poor when he was growing up that they used to have to just split like a sandwich off the dollar menu every day.
Yeah.
That's all they would eat was like they cut like a hamburger in half or cut a McChicken in half, whatever it was. And they would just eat that. And he said that now as an adult, his like body doesn't work the way it's supposed to, that like he can't do certain things and physically he has pain in places. And he attributes that to how much of his youth was spent strictly eating McDonald's. And so it's like, fuck, you know what I mean? Like maybe some of it is just like doing permanent damage to us and there's nothing we can do about it because of the system that's been set up.
And they wonder why he's killed people, you know? allegedly. But I mean, we've heard his music.
The man had to murder people. He can't touch his toes because of all those McChickens.
He literally has a song. I just heard the song with Reason. One of the lyrics is literally, all my niggas killed some niggas.
And the subtext is McDonald's made me do it.
Exactly.
I love that. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Will Miles and more My Mama Told Me.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient. I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back.
We're not going to let Joe Biden and Kamala Harris cut America's meat.
That's dead on that. That's dead on that.
Yeah, we're back here with more Will Miles, more My Mama Told Me. We're still talking about the horrors, the tragic, the awful shit that these restaurants are doing in the black and brown communities. And we're hoping that there's a way to solve it. Do you think there's a way to solve it? Is there anything we can do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been, I'm a big fan of, first of all, our friend Kofi, who has a community garden.
Kofi Thomas, very hilarious comedian based out in New York, and is has for the past few years been working on a community garden that he basically like rebuilt by hand from an abandoned parking lot. And yeah, it's his thing, and he's dope. It's great work.
I'm totally biting off of him and everything in terms of like shit I'm looking forward to. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I'm inspired by him. It's pretty crazy to be inspired by a 6'8" muscular nigga.
Wait, in your mind, is he 6'8"?
Yeah, I'm short. Everybody over 6 foot is 6'8" to me.
Kofi's like 6'1", and you're like, he gotta be like 6'8", 7 feet.
That nigga tall, man. Especially you got that guard now. But I mean, like him, Ron Finley out here in L.A., he lives out further west, and he's got a garden over there. These community gardens, and if you watch Roy Choi's show on Taste Made, there's this black woman who started this program where she goes and gets the veggies and shit from these farmers markets, and like she gets the leftovers, kind of, is what it is, but she brings that to the hood for free. So she'll get the leftover, like, lettuces, but it's a shitload of lettuce, and all the other like different fruits and veggies, and brings that and has like her own farmer's market, but everything's free.
That's dope.
Or very cheap.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, to that, and I imagine this is what it comes out of, is restaurants throw away like literally tons and tons of produce and food and stuff every day because they technically, you know, because of regulations aren't allowed to keep things nearly as long as it seems reasonable to be able to keep things. And so to that point, you know, if there's a way that we can create a space like what you're describing, where that food that otherwise would be thrown into a trash can and wasted could now be helping to not only feed people, but nourish them in a better way.
Yeah.
We're moving in the right direction.
And it shouldn't just like these people always are the stories, but I feel like it should be so out there that it's not like a story. Like, you know, the same way the first black everything is kind of, it's awful if you really think about it. It's like, it's 2020, we got the first black anything, it's sad. So it's like, it needs to be permeated everywhere so that it can no longer be like, oh, look at, check out this community garden. It should just be like, yeah, everybody, every community has a community garden where you can go for free and feed. Like if Vince Staples had that growing up, think about the type of person he'd be. Yeah, I mean, he's very nice, it seems, and he's funny as shit, but I'm just talking about, like, you know, he wouldn't have had to experience all the things he experienced maybe if he would have.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
Maybe he wouldn't have murdered people. Allegedly.
Yeah. At least all of his friends did. So, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe there's a space where that person can still be as charming and hilarious and talented as he is while simultaneously not having to go through trauma to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of us too. I mean, so many of us have the similar experience. So it's like, yeah, what if we didn't, like, even just being trained to eat McDonald's the way we were, because people got to remember we're older than Super Size Me. And I feel like that's when people started to veer away from fast food or be like, fast food is bad. Before that, I had never heard anyone say fast food was bad.
No, I mean, they literally had to get rid of these supersized side of fries because they were like, all right, they got us. We caught. Okay, you got us this time, American consumer, but we'll be back. Maybe we'll make the large a little bigger than it was before.
Exactly. Yeah.
Force you to die that way.
We'll start introducing an extra small cup. It's like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
There's no extra small. The large is huge.
Okay, let's unpack some of this research because I think it's a bit of an interesting entrance. But as I was sort of like looking into the history of fast food in this country, the thing that made for at least a grounded entrance for this conversation actually ended up being the Watts riots. I don't know how much you know about the Watts riots. But it was sparked by this dude, Marquette Fry, who was basically pulled over for drunk driving by the police, right? Which was like meant to be like this minor roadside argument that broke out. It ended up turning and escalating into like a full on fight with the police, right? But, you know, I assume he got his ass kicked, but that's not like a news story in America, right?
Yeah.
A black
yeah.
man getting beat up by the police.
Definitely not then, yeah.
Not then, not now.
Still not now, really, yeah.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was a bunch of community members who were either witnesses or tangential to this incident basically started spreading a rumor that the police had heard a pregnant woman, that like Marquette, he basically had transformed in that game of telephone into a pregnant woman, which
wow.
then launched the community into like a civil war of like 6 days of complete unrest.
Damn. I mean, I did not know all that.
Yeah. Apparently it's all just a rumor that turned the whole thing into complete chaos. Chaos that basically led to 34 people getting killed, $40 million in property damage, and then the National Guard needing to be called in to eventually
Jesus.
Like bring calm to this whole situation. And so what that ended up, what I learned from all of this, right, is that what everybody, experts sort of say about the Watts riots is that it wasn't actually the incident itself that led to it, right? It was more a reflection of all the bullshit mm-hmm. that this neighborhood had been suffering through for a long time. That, like, at this point in history, 2/3 of Watts residents had less than a high school education, 2/3, and 1/8 of that group was totally illiterate. And similarly,
Jesus, yeah.
it was only the only major city, LA was the only major city without an anti-poverty program, and the mayor also refused a confidential offer of federal money meant for jobs programs. So he's full on refusing to help like major groups of his own city, even though every other city in America had already adopted these new programs to help, you know, these underprivileged communities.
Good God. We live yeah. in a trash palace.
Yes.
Yeah.
LA apparently has a rich history of being real mean to its black residents. But so from that, and this is where we get into the fast food of it all. In 1965, President Lyndon Johnson basically, like, in the wake of the riots, sends these officials from the Small Business Administration of California, or to California, rather, from the SBA to California, saying that they need to eliminate the deep-seated causes of the riots. So he's saying, like, mm-hmm. I need y'all to go in there and figure out what caused these riots on a more, like, grand, you know, community level. And I need y'all to get rid of whatever that is. I need you to figure out how to solve this problem so that riots like these don't break out again. And what the SBA people do is they come up with this conference in 1968 where they encourage black people to basically discover business ownership through franchising, and mm-hmm. specifically through franchising in fast food. Thus, he introduces fast food chains as like a permanent staple
wow.
to not only black communities, but black business ownership as like your way out of
yeah.
poverty and loss and, you know, limited resources and shit.
It's just keeping it going, though, because in what their mind is probably going and in their what they would call defense, you are going to definitely make money putting fast food in in a community 100%. Without food. It's like, yeah, you're going to be so rich and you're going to be able to spread that wealth. But for what, at what cost?
Yeah. And even to take that a step further, right? You're going to be a certain type of wealthy compared to what you were, but you're not actually going to be rich if you own a McDonald's, right?
Right.
You franchise a McDonald's, but that's people who run McDonald's, who corporate for McDonald's is fucking, they're making stacks every time a franchise opens.
Yep.
Nobody takes a loss on the McDonald's side of things. It's the individuals who are in charge of the McDonald's that might potentially lose in this scenario. So McDonald's wins. Meanwhile, these communities are basically being just stuffed with toxic, you know, meals.
Chemicals, and, unchecked, nutritional facts. Yeah,
exactly. So it goes even further because the Office of Minority Business Enterprise, established in 1969, aimed specifically to establish 10,000 new minority franchises over 2 years. And technically, this program was open to different sectors, meaning like you could have franchised some shit that wasn't food related. But in reality, Black franchises were more likely to be in fast food than any other franchising sector. So they like really pushed Black people into the fast food sector of things.
They knew what they were doing at that point. You got to think. It's like at first we're like, yeah, but you look at what it will do for your community. But now it's like, and also we do want to like kill you guys.
Yes.
We're not into you being here so much. So also take this scrap food again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like 4 years later. Y'all are calm now. Now I'm going to kill you. Here's where it gets even more sinister. And this part I didn't know. This is, I mean, I didn't know a lot of this, but this part really like blew my fucking mind is that based off of research, it's basically been proven that pound for pound in 1965, the dietary surveys revealed that African Americans were more likely than their white counterparts of the same like wealth level, right, to meet dietary recommendations for fat, fiber, fruits, and vegetables. So in 1965, Black people are in fact eating healthier than their white counterparts. And then when they compare those same groups by 1996, the opposite was true. That like we had completely flipped positions because of the introduction of fast food
in, Jesus Christ.
In a sort of like overpopulation of fast food in Black neighborhoods.
That is,
come on, man, make a joke. Make know, this right? funny.
Yeah, yeah. This hey man, that shit hilarious.
Come on, man. Make the hurting stop.
Yeah. Good God, man.
Yeah,
that's it goes so far deep into it. I mean, yeah, because that's why we need to go back to that shit. Because I feel like that before that it was gardens and shit going on. I mean, it had to be in LA. LA's perfect weather to grow gardens and to think about how many people have nice yards here. It's the whole reason everybody from not LA is always like, why are you guys, you know, mad?
Yeah,
you've got great weather and amazing yard space. Everybody
right.
Does. So it's like
in LA, even the murderers speak properly. Like it's you just got time to be a peaceful person before you kill a person. You know what I mean? Like it's a different energy here. But I do think to the greater point, I think it's two things, right? I think it's twofold. I think community gardens probably existed. I think there was some version of sort of like communal feeding and eating all happening. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, I think you just have much more control over what you're actually taking in when you're not eating fast food. If I'm cooking, even if I over season my food, it still is probably healthier for me than if I go to McDonald's where they are using chemicals to fry something faster or make it puff up in a way that like humans aren't really supposed to consume, but it looks good for the eye in the picture and makes it feel like the meal that it's supposed to be.
And which is especially true of chickens, by the way, which is part of my issues with the chicken restaurants. But it's like, yeah, those breasts are not that big.
So. Hey, and I love a big titty, but that's not, those titties ain't supposed to be that big.
Or no, not that many too. You ever had like real chicken? It's like, damn, I wish I had more meat because I'm used to fucking Popeyes.
Right. Yeah, real chickens are, there's barely anything there.
Yeah. Even like a Roscoe's, you're like, this looks like not a lot of food, but it's like, no, this is actual chicken though.
Yeah. Right. These wings are not radiated into like some Frankenstein of a monster that you then like cut up and put into a nugget. Yeah. This is real meat.
And it's all habit forming too. Cause like back in the day, the habit was to cook your own shit. And the habit was like, you know, cause nobody has time. And I know poverty ran rampant after a little bit. Country hit like these downs, but it's like that probably played into the fast food even more, because now you're like, yo, in order to make enough money, I need more time. I don't have the time. I'll cut the time that I cook. So fast food works.
Yes, and I think it happened exactly like that. I think fast food became this thing that people promoted as a way of basically helping to feed your family in an effective way if you're a working class person. Mm. But then on top of that, they created this sort of image of Black ownership in their own communities.
Yeah.
Up until that point, Black people are sort of like oppositional and that's sort of a soft way of putting it, of white people coming into their communities and building like, you know, businesses and franchises.
Yeah, yeah.
That they would basically like at times even boycott the idea of like a white person coming in and creating some shit. And so what these corporations figure out is like, no, we'll let Black people own them and then we'll collect the bigger profit from it.
Yeah.
While they simultaneously kill themselves. It's a perfect sort of magic trick of like murder.
And they wonder why like Black people are so skeptical of the government when it's like every gift has the worst other side.
Yes.
The gift of all this Black ownership has the darkest dark side ever.
Yeah,
in terms
exactly.
of how it's affecting my entire community, like this small community of people who gets these businesses, that's up. That's great. And
right.
then it's like it's inspirational. It helps in a lot of ways. But it's also like, but look at the overall community is going to hurt for generations now.
Exactly. And I think that is important for our listeners to understand, because I do sometimes think I've had a few white listeners sort of push back at how much I blame the white devil for everything that's happening. And I think it's important to understand that it's not me saying that, like, when Lyndon Johnson goes and says, hey, fix what's happening in this community, he is in fact like sitting back twiddling his fingers together like and murder them all. I don't
right.
think that's how that worked. I think to the earlier point that we made is he went and said, hey, can you fix that? And maybe we can give a gift of some kind to help resolve this problem. And then corporations get involved. Money
yes.
gets involved in
yes.
those gifts. And it starts to be an effort to cook the gift into profit. And that's where murder and mayhem and sort of like the dastardly deeds come to be.
That even goes over to like police, because then it used to be community policing, and then they were like, here's the gift of more police to like help you feel comfortable. Also, they're going to come from a completely different area where they don't even have people who look like you.
Mm-hmm.
So their first thought is you're a danger, no matter what you look like.
Exactly. And we aren't going to do any version of vetting to see if they have any sensitivity to the community that we're
yep.
now placing them in. We'll just put them in there and you'll feel better because we put more police. And maybe that instinct was coming from a good place, but it's so blind to the actual needs of this community that you're actually putting in a fucking poison. You're putting in something
yeah.
that's going to make things worse.
And that's the entire crime bill in a nutshell.
Yeah.
But, you know, Biden, all that crew, they were all like, this is a good thing. And
right.
then it's like, but it's not, because
yeah.
but you don't know that because you're an old white man even then.
Yeah.
So it's like,
he's
yeah.
like, listen, I like police. I like sniffing hair. How can we combine the two? How can
yeah.
I help Black people feel more comfortable so that they can sniff hair in their own communities?
That's why it's that gift of like, here's a gift. And it's like Black people's response every time is, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. All right.
Right.
Like, you're not excited? No. I'm taking it with a grain of salt. Like,
yeah,
here's a gift. You got the first Black president. Okay. It's going to be far worse in 8 years.
So here's where I think to that point, the gift sort of like loses control and becomes just sinister. Right. Is that by 1990, according to research, McDonald's, Burger King and Wendy's dedicated one fifth of their radio and television advertising budget to Black audiences.
Wow. Yeah, that was noticeable.
Yeah, right. That's when you see them breakdancing. Nigga, this chicken.
And when I started hearing hip hop McDonald's ads, I was like, something changed.
Right. Different. Bitch, I'll karate kick for some fries. And it's like, all right, man, this ain't, that's not what we signed up for. But one fifth, we make up 13% of the American population, and you're dedicating 20% of your advertising to us. That's, there's something fucked up here.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It goes even further that in 2012, a Yale study found, this is Yale University, this ain't Yale Community College. 2012 Yale University study found that the fast food industry disproportionately targeted Black and Latino children in its advertising. So not only are y'all going for the grown folks, you're going for the fucking kids at a disproportionate rate because, to your point, these restaurants are the only things available and subsequently the thing that they know they can profit the most from.
Exactly. Why do you think that Dora Explorer campaign for McDonald's was so big? So, they knew what they were doing.
Right. Yeah. Like, all right. If she's going to be their representation, we're going to mix some barbecue sauce into that and see what happens.
I also feel like, you know, that's like the first hip hop ads with like actual rappers, I feel like they were McDonald's or some sort of fast food where you're like, oh, that shit, they got fucking, because you're excited. You're like, oh, shit, they got this guy. They're actually listening to what the community wants, putting this rapper in a commercial. But really, they're like, yeah, we saw money in that, my friend. We don't care.
100%. Yeah. You think fucking Pusher T made I'm Loving It? Like, yeah. He didn't have to. They didn't need him.
And Arby's, by the way. Pusha T is the his song is both the Arby's theme.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a song by like somebody named Bauer or some shit, and featuring Pusha T. So he gets
Byron Bowers and Pusha T.
But he's my favorite rapper businessman because that's such low key money. That's my favorite.
Oh no, he didn't get paid shit off that.
Off of what? McDonald's.
Off
maybe.
McDonald's.
He gets paid, I think.
Oh, does he? Because he doesn't see any residuals on McDonald's. I know that for a fact.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, it's real fucked up. They basically offered him like a one-time check.
Oh, and, right. That is it. But it was like $2 million or something. Which,
no, you're thinking of Jason Weaver in the Lion King shit.
Yes.
Where they offered him $1 million or some investment in the film, and he picked the investment because his mom was like smart and figured it out.
Yeah.
But no, Pusha T like got like $60,000 and that's
I'd be
it.
Hot.
Yeah. That's why he keeps cussing out Drake.
Yeah.
I put in work and you think I'm gonna let some light skinned bitch make fun of me? No. The fuck out of here, Drizzy. Call your son. Feed him McDonald's, you bitch.
That's my favorite beef because Drake keeps trying to put out records that are like Pusha, you didn't really drug deal. And nobody's listening to him because they're like, nah, I seen Pusha T. That nigga drug deal.
Right. He got straight back braids to this day. That motherfucker sold drugs.
I'm not buying your lies, Drake. He could have receipts and I'd still be like, I don't think so.
We've seen your white baby, Drake. This ain't that. So the last thing that I'll say about all of this, and this I think goes to the larger point and the larger issue that I think a lot of people are currently facing, and I think we'd be remiss to have this conversation without bringing it up, but food deserts. So food deserts are a huge reason that these fast food restaurants end up being the only resource that these people have. Because many people at home might be saying, well, why the fuck won't you just go to the grocery store and cook food? And the reality is that the Department of Agriculture reported that in 2010, that 23.5 million people in the U.S. live in food deserts. 23.5 million people, meaning
5 million.
That they live more than 1 mile from a supermarket in urban or suburban areas, and more than 10 miles from a supermarket in rural areas.
Jesus Christ. Because you're not walking to anywhere past a mile anyway.
Right. How could you? If you have to feed a full family, how could you carry those groceries back that far?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're 10 miles away, fuck it. You ain't seeing nothing.
If you're 10 miles away, I don't even know what your life is like. Right. In a city, you're always 1 to 2 miles away, but Yeah. Rural life. I mean, it's like, yeah, you probably drive down a country road or something. I have no clue what your whole life.
I couldn't even imagine. And then to your earlier point, sort of about like the Black Panthers of it all, this also, these food deserts also refer to food pantries, which is basically like something that's government funded to help provide food for the population. But those pantries are based on population density, which means that the people in rural areas are even less likely to live near any kind of resource to help them because of, you know, the amount of people that live in their community.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't figure it out. I got the best things available. It's like, well, yeah, but it's 12 miles away.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back with more Will Miles and more My Mama Told Me.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back.
Hello, how are you? I am under the water. Please help me. You're too much raining.
Yeah, we're back here with more Will Miles, more My Mama Told Me. We're still talking about food deserts and poverty and delicious, delicious McDonald's.
What was that quote on that?
I don't know.
Welcome back. That voice.
Sometimes I just scour the internet for things that make me laugh. And it was a man talking about too much drowning, and it just cracked me up. So I was like, that's going to be a drop for me.
Yep.
That's going to do it for your boy. All right, let's get into this game. I have a brand new game that I would like to introduce today. And this game is called Langston's Mother-in-Law Tanya Tells a Story About Her Alien Encounter.
Mother-in-law, 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 mother-in-law.
It's a great game where I'm going to play a clip from my mother-in-law, Tanya. And I would just love to get your reactions as she tells her story of a time where she and her sister encountered what they believe to be an alien spacecraft.
I love it already.
Hell yeah. Here we go.
This was in late 2003. Sharon and I were having the houses built, and we were coming to look at the progress of the house, of my house at this time. Mm-hmm. So we go across the other side of the street to see those houses and see how that neighborhood is coming along. And coming back across the street, we're stopped at the corner. And as we're sitting there, and I am in a Honda Accord, and I'm talking to Sharon. She's in the passenger seat. I'm talking to her. And she says to me, look. She says, look. I look out my driver's side window. And there is, for lack of a better description, a silver grayish object alongside my car, right out my window, right? I can look at it. It's right there.
All right. That's the first clip. Damn. What are your thoughts? How are you feeling after hearing that?
Who is Sharon? No.
What's Sharon on? I'm trying to hear more about Sharon.
I ain't never seen no ugly Sharon. So. That's kind of true. I don't know. It sounds like she really actually, first of all, where is this?
This is in like the suburbs of Baltimore.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It has to be a place where it's not, well, even Baltimore is a place where they won't believe you if you say you saw aliens. So that plays a big part in this.
Yes.
It's like,
absolutely. Yeah.
That's why all the and Men in Black touches on this a little bit. That's why they always go.
You know, documentary Men in Black. They covered this a bit.
A little bit, but that's why all the interviews that you always saw in the Inquirer is like this person on the farm, this person in a place that's the government clearly doesn't care about. Nobody has any idea what they live like. Nobody knew what anyone lived like in Baltimore till The Wire. And then everybody's like, I hate it for you. I'm sorry.
And to your point, because they were in sort of like the suburbs of Baltimore, and this specifically is like an area that they were like building new homes in. Sharon is her sister. They both got like some of those new, you know, properties built in like this area that the whole thing was just nothing for a while. And then they built up some houses. So to your point, this is a pretty open, empty space that like, you know, they're attempting to put land on. And so maybe an alien would stop by here because ain't nothing else going on.
I think it happens. Well, first of all, let me say I'm a believer. So I think it happens.
I think you made that clear from the first, your first reaction. You weren't like, this is stupid. You were like, I'm listening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that's, you know how Bill Murray supposedly will like just see regular people and be and act like, hey, it's what's up? It's me, Bill Murray, and do some shit. And there, I think he always says like, nobody's gonna believe that I did.
Yeah, no one will ever believe you.
Right. Like I had a drink with Bill Murray, literally, where he told me the Cubs were gonna win next year, and they won next year. But it's one of those things where I was out.
Wait, you did?
Yeah. I was out somewhere at a party. Bill Murray stumbled into that party and was like,
I thought you were giving an example. You're dead serious. No.
This actually happened.
Then, holy shit.
But it's one of those stories where I was, first of all, I was drunk and high.
Yeah.
And it was like Don Glover was there. It was a party I probably shouldn't have been at anyway.
It wasn't without the possibility of Bill Murray coming in. I got
But it didn't, but Donald Glover at the time, it did not seem like, you know, this was before Atlanta was big. So it was like, maybe it had just, or was still about to come out. So he was mainly. Yeah. He was a little bit popular from rap, but only in college towns. And so it was like,
I got you.
He was the biggest person there at the time. And then maybe like some actors, it was somebody's birthday. But then as Bill Murray walked in, all of us were looking like, is that fucking Bill Murray? Right. Everybody like pushed their hand in Donald's face. Like, is that Bill Murray? What's he doing here? Yeah. And nobody really knows if he knew the birthday boy or anything. Everybody I've talked to afterwards who was there is like, he was there, right? And then I saw him pull up, and Jason Burke is a huge fan. So Jason Burke went up and was like, let's get a drink with him. And so I was there for that. So then we grab a drink, and I'm like, I cannot believe Bill Murray's in front of me right now. And he's like,
to your point, that's what those aliens might have been doing. Yeah, just pulling up next to their car, being like, bitch, ain't nobody gonna believe you. And then zooming off.
Yep, yep. And I heard there's a lot of people who do, like, who else does that? Somebody else famous. Probably Lakeith. It sounds like some shit Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah, I've never heard it from Lakeith, but it sounds like a very Lakeith kind of decision.
You just pull up and we're like, nobody's gonna believe you, so what's up? Hey, isn't this crazy that you saw me? The aliens have been doing that probably for years.
I love that.
And the people they check, it's always like, all right, truly nobody's going to believe you. So,
yeah.
Except I'm not saying that about your mother-in-law. But generally.
I don't know that I believe her. Let's play some more of this audio and let's see what else you take from it.
It is level with my car. Mm-hmm. It has no windows and you don't hear a thing. And it's low enough. The front of it that I see is like an oval shape. And before I know it, it goes across the street. Now, this time I can see it fully. It looks like a blimp. There are a few houses right at the corner. It goes above those homes. And I'm saying to Sharon, I said, do you think there's a airfield back there? Because behind her house, it's a wooded area. And I said, do you think there's a landing strip over there? She said, follow it.
That's it. There's one more after this, but that's where she leaves off. How are you feeling? How much of this are you feeling like certain that this is an alien spacecraft now? Are you more certain, less certain?
I feel like I'm a little less certain, but I am certain that it is. If you go to like the Roswell tapes and all that stuff, you know, we've had access to aliens for a number of years because they've been living here, being studied. So I do think there's those areas near military bases, and I believe there's one near Baltimore, where they house aliens underground.
Yeah.
For research, mainly. They just can't tell us yet, I guess, because we're supposed to panic. Mm-hmm. But I did hear that was why they made E.T. also, to be like, just let's gauge what it would be like if we introduce an alien to the world.
Oh, like a soft opening of the alien restaurant is E.T.
Yeah.
And all these alien movies, so that like, all right, we've talked about it. Now when we tell you about the real shit, you won't be like hyperventilating at the idea.
Yeah. It was like, it's not coming out left field. And E.T. was to be like, they could be friendly. We don't know yet. But
and so are, in that conspiracy theory, Steven Spielberg is a consenting member of whatever party is introducing E.T., or is he just given a script and then they're like, hey, make this, but we won't tell you why.
I think it is a little bit of everything. I don't know how much he knew when he was writing it. I don't know if it was a situation I'm finding out now, where there are, or maybe it was an open writing assignment and they hired
the government. They hired him to do it, and they were like, "Hey, we're gonna need an alien script."
Yeah, I honestly, it could be. No, I didn't know that was a thing until very recently. But I'm like, oh, sometimes they have the idea and you have to fill in the blanks. But I'm like, okay, so I wonder if that was a open writing assignment that Steven Spielberg took under his belt and was like, this would work. And so I don't know how consenting he was in the process, but I do think, the government probably paid the film studio to be like, of all the things that are coming in right now, make an alien.
Oh, this is priority number one type shit.
Yeah.
I got you. I see your vision, mama. Money.
So yeah, because that sounds like one of those things that came from a base and was going, like, they were testing it out in the streets.
Yeah.
In an area that was kind of vacant. So they were like, hey, let's see.
Oh, so wait. So in your mind, there's a possibility that aliens are not piloting this anymore, that this is like American soldiers or people piloting a thing that they've now taken from alien visitors.
I think that happens. And I think I also got that from X-Files, where that might actually happen.
But, okay. Yeah. Another documentary I love, X-Files. Okay, let's listen to this last clip and we'll see where you land on everything.
It's really very quiet. Mm-hmm. The windows are up, but I don't see any traffic or anything. So we go across the street trying to catch this thing. As it goes over the houses, I have to follow the street and go around the curve to where it is. We see it go over the houses, and we get around there, and I'm speeding around there, and nothing. It's gone. I drive behind the wooded area, the reserve. I drive behind there to see if we can see anything, because you can see behind the houses. there's no clear area for something like that to land. First, we were like, well, where did it go? What, you know, where did it go? If it's not back here, where did it go? Because behind the wooded area is a street and some more homes. So I guess it just dawned on us, what else could it possibly be? It literally disappeared.
That's it.
That's wild.
Thoughts? Where what are you feeling now?
I feel more into the idea that it could be the government testing alien equipment.
Yeah.
I'm very in. Also, you gave big son-in-law energy with the mm-hmms. That is a mother-in-law telling a story to her son-in-law.
Sure.
Ass response. For sure.
Oh, I wanted her to be able to get it all out, but I also wanted to be polite and patient as she's telling the story. If it was any one of my friends, I'd have been like, all right, get to the meat and potatoes here.
Yeah.
But with her, I got to be a little more respectful, and she's a lovely woman, so I would
of
never
course.
Want to disrespect her.
As is my mother-in-law. I love her. There's definitely, you do definitely hear more stories as the son-in-law, though. Because
yeah.
It's also like being intro to the family, you're now the new ear.
Yeah.
It's like, you haven't heard any of this.
So, right.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
All right, I tried these bits on these idiots and they didn't buy it.
Yeah.
But now I got a new audience. So here we go.
And I'm just eating it up. I'm like, yeah, all right. The same way you were. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me more.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Talk that talk.
But yeah, I think it's probably a government either testing it out, or even if the alien's driving, it's probably government watched.
I love that. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. I believe that we've nailed it. We've resolved that spacecraft was being piloted by American soldiers who had stolen it from an alien and are now testing that equipment to see if it's somehow usable. And apparently it's not going that well, because this was a decade ago and they still ain't released that new silver blimp for us to be flying around in. But maybe someday.
What I didn't tell you was one of those soldiers was Elon Musk. So that's
a young bald man by the name of Elon Musk was flying that plane, and he spent all his soldier money on a new scalp, on a new head of hair. So we've made no progress. Well, can you tell the people at home where they can find you? What cool shit you have going on?
At Mr. Will Miles on everything. MR.
Why'd you get
breath?
Sad?
I was like, oh, I hate social media, but on everything, except when I'm good at it, then it's fun. But
yeah,
when I have a viral tweet, it's
sure.
great. But
when people are retweeting, it's the best. And then when nobody responds to you, it's like, ah, oh, this is toxic. Nobody should be on here.
It's my general relationship with
back in my day, kids went outside.
Ah, this nigga ain't getting no retweets in months. That's why. But yeah, and my website is now Mr. Will Miles, but the Mr. is spelled out. So M-I-S-T-E-R.
Oh, all right.
Will all Miles. Right. Yeah.
There you go. All right. Well, please.
Everything on television I've written for.
Yep. That's not untrue. Will has written for a lot of television. The stuff you love and the stuff you hate. Will wrote it.
Yep.
And as always, you can follow me at Langston Kerman. And please, if you have any drops, if you have any videos, if you have any conspiracies, if you have any voice memos you would like me to hear, I would love for you to send them to mymamapod@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and it could end up on the podcast. This was a lovely time, and bye.
Bye, everybody.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.